Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me every Thursday live and on podcasts and replayed on the weekends. You can always find schedules of all of the iHub shows on the iHub.com website. I am very pleased this hour to be interviewing somebody. You know, I don't often interview people, but I was fascinated and intrigued by this woman's background and the position she is now taking in trying to achieve something that I feel very strongly about, especially because I was a top-ranking executive in an American public company. Natalie Wood is her name. I believe that she has a background of being an international human rights lawyer, but she is now really focused on trying to help women start their own businesses. And this is something that has been going on worldwide with really remarkable results. And we need more women involved in business in this country. Natalie, are you there?
I am. Hi, Anita.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me. Tell me a little bit first about your experience, your international experience, and what brought you to this subject in particular.
Sure. Well, I started traveling very young. I completely fell in love with it. when I was about 18, I took my first year off. I'm a dual citizen with England, so I went to England, worked there for a bit, and then raised up money to start backpacking. And from there, it just grew. And now I've been to over 70 countries. I've lived in 9 while traveling. I mean, so much has happened. But a big part of it was that I got very interested in human rights and seeing, you know, international politics and economics. And it really inspired me to go to law school. So that happened when I was in Ghana. I was studying in Ghana for a while, and then I became a human rights lawyer, did that for about 10 years, and decided last year to finally launch my own self-sustaining nonprofit, which is very focused on women coffee producers. And so all the coffee that we sell is grown by women producers all around the world. So that's a very short answer, just like a top of the answer. There's a lot more with my traveling. I feel like it's really influenced every part of me and Cafecita, which is the coffee business.
Now, I'm interested in, I did some reading in the past about, I believe it was called the Bangladesh Project, the microfinancing model that was being used in a lot of poor countries around the world.
Yes. So that is a very popular model, and also something that went into the inspiration for Cafecita. My experience with microfinance, specifically to women, is actually in Oaxaca. I was living in Oaxaca for 6 months in 2019 and working specifically with a nonprofit there that was incredible, and they do responsible tourism. So the money that they receive from the tourism, where they take people out to kind of see how all the traditional art is being made, is then used for these no-interest microloans to the women artisans.
Well, say a little bit more about what microfinance actually is, how it works.
Sure. So microfinance basically, each program is a little bit different, but the one that I've worked with groups the women together in groups of three and gives them these loans. In this case, it was no interest loans, and that's something I feel very strongly about. Some of them do have interest, and I don't support that model. But the ones that are no interest, it goes to the women, and Along with that, they're also provided business training and market access. And so it's been able that they get this kind of alternative financing that they can actually grow their businesses. And in the program that I was working with in Oaxaca, some of these women not only had supported or had grown their own, like one business, they had actually opened multiple businesses. And, you know, as research shows, right, when women are, you know, in these leadership positions and their businesses are thriving, it doesn't just help that specific woman, it really helps her family and her whole community. So these microfinance models have been incredibly successful to provide an alternative financing model for women in particular. And a lot of the programs really do focus on women for that second part that I had mentioned, which is that studies show that when you're, you know, supporting one woman, you're not just supporting her, you're supporting the family and the community, which unfortunately the data does not show that the same with men. So that's why there's always a focus on really financing women.
Now, I noticed in some of the publicity that I read that came out from the work that you are doing and from your own company, Cafecita, I noticed that one of the statistics was that that when women are involved in companies, they tend to do better. In other words, we have, even in the United States, a real paucity of women in CEO or chief financial officer positions. And in those companies that do have women in those positions, they've actually shown that the companies do better. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think it's incredible when you look. I'm a huge data nerd, so I love studies like that because it really shows, based on the numbers, that when a woman is in the CEO position, the company is actually more profitable. And yet, on the flip side, right, we just don't have enough women in these CEO positions, even though all the data shows that they actually do better. So, I mean, that's something it sounds like with your background that you probably saw firsthand as well. And, you know, if there's any more reason you need why women should be in these leadership positions, you know, at least the American way, right, it is profitable. Like, they will actually make the company, you know, get to profitability a lot faster than men do in the same position.
Well, I've also, my own experience, in fact, but I've also read some of the statistics. For a data nerd, you probably know more of them than I do, about the fact that women, in fact, even in middle-level positions, women tend to make better managers than men. They're more cooperative in bringing people together for a group decision that everybody can move together to accomplish, or they tend to be more sensitive to issues, personal issues that may be getting in the way of people getting their work done.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I think it's, you know, all of these things are, of course, generalizations, and not all women are like that. But looking at the research, I mean, that is completely true. And it's not, I don't think that it's something that's necessarily right ingrained in women more than men have. It's just how we've been, like, socialized, right, to have more maybe empathy and compassion and have those qualities that really make a good supervisor. So I think that's something that, whether women are in those positions or if it's training that men should be going through as well, so that they can also have that same type of relationship with their employees. And, you know, I think if it's proven to be more effective, like, we really should be focusing on that.
Are there other countries that are doing this better than we are?
In what sense?
Well, I mean, are there other countries where women have a greater percentage of involvement in large companies, in running companies? I know that there are some countries that have mandated percentages of women in their governments or on boards of directors.
Yeah, I don't know in particular the research on that. So I can guess and I can make assumptions, but I don't know for sure. I can't say another country is definitely having a better model. There are countries, I'd say, that are better in terms of family planning and being able to allow a woman to have a family and also pursue higher education and her career, which we know, like, the U.S. is awful. Really one of the only countries that doesn't have paid maternity leave, whereas if you look at a country like Sweden, it's really supportive of a woman being able to have a family and run a business. So based on that alone, I would assume that Sweden also probably has women who are doing better in their work because they're not having to choose between a family life and their work life.
One of the things that was in the promotional material I read that made me laugh out loud was where it said more large companies run by men named John than all the large companies run by women combined.
It's crazy. I mean, when I saw that, I was like, that can't be right. And sure enough, it is. And it, you know, this is 2021. Like, you would think we would be better by now.
Now, are there any particular businesses that women are more likely to go into than men, for example, or where women are more clustered in those businesses as opposed to in a broader range of businesses that men are running?
I'm also not sure about that. As working as a lawyer, I could say that in terms of law, if you look at family law, it's very women dominated. Most family law lawyers are women. So I know that probably in each industry, there's like a section where you can say like women are going into. But I think it's hard to make like a general statement on it.
And we're going to have to take a break shortly, but I do want to ask you before we break, are there any particular businesses that you most recommend women should pursue? Somebody who has decided they want to start their own business.
I mean, I think my view on business is people really should be going into it with their full heart, right? As cheesy as it sounds, like, I do believe people should be doing what they're passionate about. So I don't think that there's necessarily industries. I think it should be equal across the board. I think every industry should have men and women represented. But I think that women or anybody shouldn't feel pressured to go into something just to kind of change that representation. But if they want to do it, there should be the mentorship and the funding and everything there to kind of support them to make that business successful, whatever they decide.
Well, one of the things I want to ask you about, and as I said, we're going to have to take a break in about less than a minute, but one of the things I'd like to ask you about is with regard to these small loans, like the microfinancing, as opposed to a woman having to walk into a bank and still to this day having to try and convince them to support the business she wants to go into, what do people... You know, the average woman who has an idea, she can sew or she can cook or she thinks of something that my mother invented what she thought was the way to keep steel wool from rusting. So I do want to ask you, you know, what is needed for women to even start a business of their own? And as opposed to, you know, going to a bank and getting a loan for $5 million. I'll be right back with the answer to that question from Natalie Webb. This is Anita Rufus. You're listening to iHub.
She's lovable. She's liberal. And she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
And again, I am speaking with Natalie Webb. I am so sorry. I think I called you Natalie Wood. Are you there, Natalie? Hello? Uh-oh. Did we lose her?
Hi, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. I'm apologizing for having called you Natalie Wood. I am so sorry.
No problem.
Before the break, I was saying I'm interested, and I think any woman who wants to start up her own small business is interested in what do you have to do to qualify to get the kind of loan that isn't given by a big bank. In other words, these microfinancing organizations.
Right. So in the United States, what I've been seeing more of is, for women in particular, is either angel investors, right, which is anybody who comes in to kind of invest in your business before that $5 million venture capital line, or crowdfunding apps like Kickstarter. And with those, it's a similar version of like microfinance, except that you're just getting these little loans from the community. People can choose to invest and they get a set interest back, or they get a, you know, something determined beforehand about what's in it for them. But it's an alternative model of financing as well, because you don't have to just rely on the bank. You can rely on more of a kind of a community aspect of it.
And are there organizations of angels, as you called them?
Not that I know in particular. There's definitely angel investors out there. One of the great developments lately is that as women, there's more women going into investing. Still not a lot. I mean, it's still like a teeny percentage compared to men, but it's a growing percentage, which is really great. And women investors often, more often than not, want to invest in other women or minority-owned businesses. So I think the challenge is, you know, plugging in and finding like the type of investor who, you know, you still have to pitch your idea to. I'm sure that there are ways of finding these specific investors, but I don't know like specifically where to. I don't know any specific ones I can recommend.
Now, tell me about Cafecita. What is your company like, and what does it do? You mentioned that you support women growers. Talk a little bit more about that.
So Cafecita is a women-led coffee company based in Los Angeles, and all of our beans come from sustainable women-owned coffee farms and co-ops from around the world, and a percentage of every sale goes to supporting women's nonprofits. So we're completely focused on women's empowerment along the whole supply chain, from the producers all the way up until our board is all like very incredible women accomplished in their fields. But, you know, we really focus on promoting women's empowerment because the coffee industry is incredibly male-dominated. Despite going back to like looking at the women producers, women often make up 70% of the manual labor on a coffee farm, but they're, you know, the percentage of women who actually own the coffee farms is much lower, as low as, you know, 5 to 20% in a, depending on the country.
Wow.
And so, yeah, so it's this area that while doing a lot of research, I was thinking, well, this is crazy. Like, this is really bad. But because a lot of companies in the U.S. are owned by men, even though, of course, they should have gender equity as one of their values, they're not in the same position to focus primarily on just sourcing from or like promoting women's empowerment in the same way. And so I decided to start to launch Cafecita with this, you know, mission in mind and working exclusively with the women producers to really give them the same market access, to make sure that they're getting paid fairly, and just to ensure that they're in these positions, these decision-making and leadership positions.
How do you think we can get women to support more women, and minorities for that matter, in starting up their own businesses? For example, if there's a group of women, I live in the Palm Springs area, there's a lot of women here, some married, some widowed, who have access to considerable amounts of discretionary money that they donate to nonprofits or whatever. Is there a model for some of these women to come together to start their own small business generating kind of organization?
I think that's a great idea. And that goes along with what I was saying with the angel investors. that there are more women who are entering and investing, but that's the side of the business that I don't know very well, but I think it's something that really needs to be tapped into, because I think a lot of women that, you know, they want to be a part of that, like, they fought for women's rights, and now, you know, they have kind of the resources to be able to help other women, like, lift, you know, and, like, rise, and so I'm sure that there are ways of kind of coming together and building that community, and either pooling the money together or just kind of learning from each other about being investors. But again, like, that's something that I don't know firsthand on.
Well, I think that we should find a way to start that.
I think so too. That's a wonderful idea.
We have to take another quick break. Will you hang with me for a little while longer?
Yeah.
Thank you so
Absolutely.
Much. I'm talking with Natalie Webb, not Natalie Wood, Natalie Webb, about women and business. We'll be right back.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
And thank you again so much for joining me here on iHub Radio. You can always go to iHubRadio.com to listen live to all of the people on our station. And I am very pleased this hour to have as my guest Natalie Webb, who has started a company called Cafecita to support women coffee growers. Tell me a little bit about your company and how people can reach you if they want to order coffee.
Of course. So Cafecita, it's right now, because of the pandemic, we are focused on e-commerce, which is great. So about half of our business is all on our online store, and then we also supply coffee to other cafes around Los Angeles. So for your listeners, the website is Cafecita Coffee, and that's spelled Cafecita coffee.com. And on the website, you'll see not only just the coffee that we have for sale and our online shop, but we actually list all of the information about the coffee producers, like the farmers, so you know exactly who you're supporting and the values and just kind of the missions and their history in creating their co-ops. So that's something we really want people to know, who they're supporting, right, with their amazing coffee. The coffee is all single origin, organic, and fair trade certified. And then we also have a page titled Women and Coffee, which actually explains gender inequality in the coffee industry, specifically at origin, and some of those facts that I had touched on earlier about, you know, like the 70% of labor on farms is actually by women, but they're not in the same position, leadership positions. A lot of times they don't own the land, and just the hurdles that they face, including with the financing, like we talked about. So there's a lot of resources there, so people can really kind of understand why this is so important and why it really matters to be supporting women coffee producers in particular.
And
then
one,
of course,
go ahead.
Sorry, I just going to add one more thing. You can also see all about our team. So I had also talked about, like, our board of directors, and so you'll see, you know, everybody's bio. So really, we focus so much on transparency and, of course, sustainability and all of that, because we want people to know not just have this amazing coffee, but really know who they're supporting by making those purchases. And we have a page on the nonprofits, because a percentage of every purchase goes to women's nonprofits. So right now we are partnered with two nonprofits, and one of them is the one that's in Oaxaca that I had talked about, that I had previously worked really firsthand with and was so inspired by, because they offer the no-interest microloans to the women artisans in the villages surrounding Oaxaca. So not only are you supporting the women growers with the coffee purchase, but your a percentage will also go to make microfinance loans to these women artisans.
And I think that's really important as a model for other businesses, whether they're run by women or men, but particularly women because I think there's a real misconception out there in the world about whether women support other women in getting ahead. My experience, and I've been involved in feminist issues for, you know, 40 years, 50 years actually, and I found that stereotype of the snipey woman, you know, I'm going to take care of myself and I can't help those others. I just haven't found that to be true at all. Most of the women I've ever been involved with in business or in nonprofits really were supportive of other women getting up and making it. And I think the fact that some of your proceeds go into that kind of a nonprofit is really admirable, and I think it could serve as a model for others.
Yeah, I completely agree. I also have never experienced that firsthand. If anything, because there's not a lot of women in the same position, right? Like, of all the founders, new business founders, 80% are men. So we're looking already that it's like a very small percentage of women. And they've been so supportive. I mean, when I find other women-owned businesses and brands, we always try to collaborate and see how we could support each other, because it isn't like a competition, right? Like, we all do better. Everyone does better when we all do better. So it's important to lift each other up.
And you said something early on in our conversation that I think is worth talking about again. One of the things that I recall from reading about microfinance going on in places like Bangladesh was very, very small amounts of money given to women artisans or sewers or people who have some skill that they can give back to the community. Those very small loans make a huge difference because it lifts the status of those women and their families, and it does add to the productivity of wherever they live.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the organization that we work with in Oaxaca, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think each loan is maybe a couple $100s at the most, and they're almost always paid back, like 99.9% paid back. It makes a huge difference, though, because these are, you know, we're also looking in Oaxaca where things are cheaper, but they're able to do so much with that, not just the financing, but the training that goes along with it to make it as effective as possible. So it's really incredible to see what these women are capable of doing, and not, again, like, not just for themselves, but for the whole community.
So if there was one policy change that you would propose that you think would make a huge difference for women who want to get into business, what might it be?
Oh, there's so many. I think in the U.S. it's so hard. I do think that the policies around family is very important. It's probably top of my mind because we've been seeing all these articles, right, about the declining birth rate, and I think that goes hand in hand with women who are putting off having kids because they want to actually, like, go into business. So I think that needs to be something on a policy level that needs to change in the U.S. I mean, I think we're getting to a point where it's going to be forced to have to change. But I also think that financing is a big one, right? Like, less than 3% of all venture capital recently has gone to women-owned businesses. Like, 3% is nothing. So whether it's traditional funding models or alternative funding models, I think that we need to have a way that people who want to, you know, start a business can actually do it and have the financing to make it successful, because studies also show that women-owned businesses are often underfunded. So I think that's a big one. And then also, just maybe not on a policy level, but I think having mentorship and having networking available to women, because if you're not seeing other women founders out there and you don't have that example, it's really hard to even think about yourself going into it. I know in my experience, I didn't have that. And so when I was thinking about, okay, how am I going to start Cafecita, I reached out to, like, the SBA and, you know, all the things that I could find, but it was almost always men I was talking to, and they weren't very supportive, to say the least, or they weren't very inspiring. I never saw myself in them. And so I think there needs to be a way that women can connect with other women and have that mentorship, because I think that will go a very, very, long way.
Well, I want to suggest that that's your next project.
Sounds good to me.
you need to set up the Angel Network for women who have discretionary money that they'd like to invest, and you need to set up the equivalent of a women's chamber of commerce nationwide.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for your time. My guest has been Natalie Webb, and you can reach her through Cafecita, C-A-F like Frank, E-C-I-T-A, cafecitacoffee.com. Natalie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Anita. Really enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure. I want to hit some other things, and because I've been talking to Natalie, about women. I don't know if you heard this this news item this week. And Florida, of course it's Florida. A teacher in a Florida high school altered the pictures of female students in the yearbook. They apparently have a dress code at that school because, of course, we have to control not only women in business, but we have to control the way women look. There are some people in this country who I'm sure would be very happy if we had the same rules about not seeing anything but a woman's eyes through all of the veiling and robes. But in this Florida high school, the teacher altered the yearbook pictures of the girls because they were too revealing. One actually had a blouse on with a V-neck. And I will admit, the V-neck was very modest, but there was at least the image of the fact that below her dress neckline, the girl had breasts. They put the equivalent of a piece of fabric over the V, because God forbid we should know that that young girl had breasts. And it wasn't revealing at all. There was another girl who was wearing a blouse that showed her shoulders. You know, one of those split shoulder sleeves? They covered that up because, after all, we can't have girls looking like that. And yet, in the same yearbook where all these photos of girls were covered up because the teacher in this Florida high school thought they were too revealing, in that same yearbook, they had a picture of one of the male athletes wearing a Speedo with his hairy body and tattoos all over him. That was fine. What the hell is in the water in Florida? I heard something else this week with regard to women while we're on the subject, a subject which I don't mind getting on ever. Facial recognition, you know, these things that police departments and the intelligence services are using more and more to try and identify criminals on the street or to compare the faces of people with, let's say, a drawing that a crime victim has come up with that they think represents what that criminal looked like. And they use facial recognition. Well, guess what? I don't know who put together these facial recognition software programs, but it turns out that they don't know how to distinguish the faces of black people. Hello. And they have trouble distinguishing one woman from another. All I can say is it's clear that whoever put together those facial recognition programs was a man, a white man. I rest my case. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. We'll be back in just a moment. I've got some more crazy news going on before we end the broadcast today. And again, get in touch with cafecitacoffee.com to support women in business.
Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, once again, I want to ask, what the hell is in the water in Florida? I don't know if you heard this, but this story just had me laughing out loud, except that it's sad. Liz Cheney, who was ousted from her leadership position by the Republicans in the House because she dared to tell the truth about the fact that the election in November was not stolen, she has an opponent already who has announced that he's going to run against her for her House seat in the election for the House next year. Now, you know, all House members are up for election every 2 years, so Cheney has to defend her seat next year after having been voted out of her leadership position in the Republican caucus in the House. Well, she has an opponent whose name is Anthony Bouchard, who has had to confess that when he was 18, he impregnated a 14-year-old girl. He described it as being very much like the Romeo and Juliet story, except he didn't kill himself at the end. But I'm digressing. By the way, isn't that statutory rape when an 18-year-old impregnates a 14-year-old? Well, the law in Florida said she couldn't get married legally until she was 15, so he waited. They got married. The marriage did not last. She was pregnant. She did have a baby. And he said, bottom line, it's a story. When I was young, two teenagers, girl get pregnant. You heard those stories before. It's like the Romeo and Juliet story. P.S. She's no longer alive. She committed suicide at some point in her life. They did marry when she was 15 and he was 19. They got divorced about 3 years later. This guy is running for the House, and he wants to take over the seat of the principled Liz Cheney, who I seldom agree with on any issue, but who I applaud for having at least taken a principled stand about what happened on January 6th and about the truth about who got elected last November. And speaking of who got elected, you know there's this cuckoo audit going on in Arizona. Well, now, in spite of the fact that this audit is being run by people who've never done a voting audit before, the bottom line is that the Arizona Secretary of State has said that the county is going to have to spend millions of dollars to replace all their voting machines because the voting machines have now been compromised as a result of this inept and stupid audit. The machines are no longer secured because they were turned over to this private company that has never done an audit before to review. And here's another one of those stories that just made me go, what? Yoga, which was banned from a lot of public schools because parents said it was going to teach children to change their religion. Well, yoga has now been allowed back into Alabama schools, but they've put a lot of restrictions on. The legislature lifted a 10-year-old, oh, more than 10 years, about 20-year-old ban on yoga in the schools. Under their new law, yoga instructors, however, are barred from using any of the Sanskrit names for the poses in yoga. They have to find some way to describe them in English. Also, they can't say om, and they're not even supposed to meditate. God forbid they should center their minds and get calm. So mantras are verboten. Chanting of any kind is not allowed. They're not allowed to say namaste to each other, which is like a peaceful greeting. It's like saying aloha or shalom. And the state is going to require that any students that want to participate in the yoga classes have to get a permission slip signed by their parents. And included in the bill that was passed by the legislature in Alabama to allow yoga back in the schools, in the bill they passed, it says, "I understand that yoga is part of the Hinduism religion. I give my child permission to participate in yoga." As long as they don't say or do anything that might make them think that being Hindu was something positive. Also, among the things that just make me laugh out loud, did you see this headline? There's a fungus. Now, you know the cicadas are back, this 17-year thing where the females have to be impregnated and then they all die, but for 17 years the eggs are buried underground and then 17 years later the cicadas come out and do it all over again. Well, now there's a headline that said a fungus could turn some cicadas into sex-crazed salt shakers of death. I don't even want to understand what that means. I don't want to be near cicadas. Do you know there are people who are giving out the recipe for frying cicadas and chomping on them as a snack on television? Three cheers for those of you who are so into natural stuff that you would even be willing to eat a fried cicada. Not me. And now I want to share with you something really extraordinary to close out the show. Simone Biles, who is that incredible young woman who is a gymnast, who is absolutely amazing to watch. She defies gravity. And the shape that her body is in, the toning and the training, is absolutely staggering. Well, this past Saturday, Simone Biles executed a vault where she ran and then jumped onto that vault, is what they call it, that kind of wrapped long horse, I guess. I don't know what they call it. It's a vault. She vaulted herself onto that platform and did a vault that is considered so dangerous that no other female has ever attempted it in competition. In fact, gymnastics limits the scoring rewards for this even being tried. And she did it flawlessly. And when she was asked why she does it, Simone Biles said, "Because I can." That's a young woman who is a great model for all of the women out there who want to attempt to do something that they've never done before and that maybe nobody else has ever done before.